Welcome to the Notes to My Legal Self, AI Insights, where law and AI collide. Get ready to level up your legal game with us. We've got career advice, cutting-edge developments, mind-blowing legal tech, and more. Know someone making waves in the legal AI world? Nominate them, or even nominate yourself. We love courageous souls. And don't forget, we want to hear from you too. Ask questions, drop comments. Let's build a community of legal superheroes. But here's the deal. We're all about to have a blast. AI may be serious, but we're here to make it fun. So buckle up, get ready to power up, and let's embark on this exciting journey together. Now, let's introduce your fearless host, Olga Mack. Get ready to dive into the awesomeness of Notes to My Legal Self, AI Insights. Let's go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Notes to My Legal Self. I'm really excited to have this conversation because it's going to be as geeky as they come. We're going to talk about data and we're going to do a deep dive. And we're going to talk about where we're going, where we've been, and what's available and how to position your career so that you are part of the conversation and are able to participate in economic opportunities that this direction creates. Without further ado, I have Cassie with me.
Hello.
I believe neither of us requires a massive introduction because we've been now talking about AI and data for months.
Yeah.
Not years, but we'll get there, but definitely more than weeks. So for a little while, we recorded a few episodes and have had many conversations. So we're going to do our usual. We're going to start with a rapid fire. Okay, ready?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, legal tech tools or traditional methods?
Legal tech?
Yeah. Tools all the way.
Tools. I'm all in on legal tech, so all the way.
No yellow pads?
I mean, I do have a yellow notepad.
Yeah. And sometimes my silence speaks louder than my words. I think people who know me get really eerie when I'm silent for a little too long. Legal philosophy or practical solutions?
Practical solutions all the way. Sometimes philosophy gets on my nerves a little bit. I'm like, just get to the point. So are you more esoteric, Olga?
I am. This is my tool. This is my problem. This is my measurement. This is my goal. Am I progressing? What am I doing wrong? What skills I need to pick up? Do I need to get a better tool? Do I need an expert? Yeah, so I'm very, very much an A to B type of person. And if you're on my team and you're going to start talking about meaning of life, this is probably going to be a short-lived team. Very much. Legal precedent or legislative history? Or intent?
I think legal precedent, probably. As an attorney, like looking at that case law, it's always fascinating to see the way that goes and how it can vary from court to court. We're seeing a lot of that right now, of course, with new data sources and how just like discovery issues are being dealt with. So what about you? Are you?
I think I'm more of an intent because I always find myself in the position of applying obscure laws to new technologies. And mm-hmm. I find that the intent becomes important. But now when we talk about obscure laws, I'm talking about DMCA in the context of AI. So we're not talking about rules against perpetuity here. We talk about something relatively recent. No. Sorry, that was not meant to be a PTS.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's okay. We'll let it slide.
Billable targets or work-life balance?
I want to say work-life balance, but I am really, I don't take my own medicine. I'm definitely that person that just works. So I aspire to be work-life balance.
As someone who doesn't know what balance means in the eyes of certain somebodies, including mm-hmm. spouse.
Yes, yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I see.
Yes.
It's an aspirational goal. I'm certainly not into billable targets, but I'm certainly aloof around the work-life balance situation. All right. Legal TV drama, accurate or exaggerated?
It is exaggerated and under-exaggerated at the same time.
I think it's exaggerated except for Harvey Specter. That stuff is totally real. It has to be.
I'm personally a fan of true crime more than necessarily like a dramatic legal courtroom. So like actually watching it, but I do find the dramatize. It's over dramatic in some ways. And then it's just like, that would never really happen in court. So
I find true crime a little too gruesome. I don't like horror movies. I don't like seeing humans making life of other humans miserable. I have an empathetic gene and I really don't like, I can definitely look at blood and all of that, but I would rather look at flowers and imagine a beautiful world. My spouse is very much into that. Mm. That's why we rarely watch TV together. Okay, legal internships or clerkship?
Internship.
I have pretty good clerkship, externships, but internships definitely have been more meaningful. Mm-hmm. All right, legal education reform needed or we're good?
Absolutely needed. Yes. But I feel like it's been a long time coming and now it's like, all right, let's do it. Let's do this. Let's have a real conversation about what new attorneys need entering the market. So I'm assuming you feel the same way because I've seen you.
I've been feeling the same way for a very long time, which is why I've been teaching very non-traditional courses that have been missing in the curriculum, more sort of skills related and things you can monetize on a day one. I presume right. You go to law school precisely because you want to make a gainful employment out of it. And I've taught now for a while and all my classes have been first in the law schools that I've been teaching, which is a pretty good indicator of me thinking a little bit outside the box. All right, let's talk about the data provenance standards initiative by Data and Trust Alliance that mm-hmm. aims to establish cross-industry metadata standards for enhancing transparency in the origin data sets used by sort of traditional data sources and AI. Mm-hmm. So it has a very broad mission. And it has been developed collaboratively by 19 organizations. And the standards are focusing sort of on source, legal rights, privacy, data lineage, and the intent for it to be public, I believe in Q2 of 2024. So they've announced it a few weeks ago. And what do you think has motivated this data provenance standards initiative?
There's a lot of scrutiny about the data sets that are being used to train AI models. And I think that going back to my old roots of e-discovery and having databases with data sets just to demo a product, I remember getting demo databases that were the Enron data set. So the Enron productions were made public after that whole fiasco. And there was no cleaning of the data. There was PII in there. There was inappropriate information in there. So I think that it serves the purpose of tracking, again, the provenance of the data, how it can be used, the type of data it is, what it would be appropriate to be used for, and legal issues around it. Because before 2023 really being like a year of reckoning for AI in a lot of ways, the many years of data sets just kind of being out there in the universe and not, I would say probably as a whole, a broad statement, not a lot of attention has been made about where it's come from, how it's being used, what's the appropriate use for it, what are legal rights. I think it's really just trying to level set and address it going forward, because there is so much scrutiny that has started and I think will continue based off of things like the EU AI on the provenance. Where did that data come from? Was it ethically sourced? Is it being used in an appropriate way? I mean, I'd love to hear your perspective of the ideals behind it and how do you do it and implement it knowing there's so many data sources already out there in the world?
I think the motivation is really around trust. every conversation I've had around provenance, and I've had many conversations around provenance when I was in Web3, because that's one of the sort of prime application of blockchain data, of blockchain technology. The provenance conversations always are about trust first. And I do think that makes sense in the context of skyrocketing AI conversations. So I do think trust is sort of the big theme. I also think, I agree with you, it's around risk reduction and sort of also capitalization on opportunities, financial opportunities as well. This initiative, I think, been slowly coming, I would say, but very steadily and exponentially gaining traction. And that's because for the last couple of decades, every time we've had conversation about technology, let alone disruptive technologies, we always have had uncomfortable questions and answers around data. More specifically, it culminated recently because we're now asking to explain what's happening in the black box. And the short answer is we have no idea. That's a very uncomfortable answer. And that answer really needs to be broken down by what happens before it enters the box, what happens in the box, and what happens after with the box. And that, if you kind of break it down in those three stages, and those are rough stages, that begs a question of understanding your data, and no one really in their organizations have a good answer. So between trust and risk, I think those are the primary factors. And I do think eventually it will be about opportunities, because once you get a hold of an understanding of what you have in your backyard, then you can imagine the things you can do with stuff you have. And that's where the sort of opportunity come in. Let's talk about sort of big versus small companies. Do you think going this direction will have an impact on small businesses?
I think it could. I think it could increase the cost to develop AI models, because if we gameplay this out and we look at if data sets, it becomes widely accepted to create provenance around data sets, then will there be a cost associated? You know, will there be a premium on data sets that have that provenance established, as opposed to maybe data sets that are created from scraping or downloading from, you know, libraries that are available out there? So if provenance vetted data sets come at a premium, then there could be challenges for small companies being able to pay for those data sets. That would be my one concern, I would think. And also, it's kind of an acknowledgement that there is risk in the horizon and how these data sets are used. So legal risk, because one of the proposed metadata elements for this standard is what are the legal rights or obligations to using those data sets? I think it's an acknowledgement of things to come. So I do think that that's going to be a barrier to entry that wasn't there, you know, 2 years ago. So I think, you know, it could be a more challenging thing. But I'd like to hear your thoughts, because I know, Olga, you've worked with so many startups, and you probably can get into the mind of a startup founder or a product team.
I have many skills. Reading minds is not one of them. Predicting behavior is. And I am increasingly good at it, because I've had to do it many times in my career. So there is a difference between mind reading and predicting behavior. But it's really interesting. I'm actually pretty optimistic. And I actually will tell you why. Because I think the tools for us to inventory, sort, groom the data are being developed. And if those become legislative requirements or standard body requirements, I think what we'll see is money being poured and resources being poured into developing tools to basically play with data in a sophisticated way. And I agree with you that initial impact on the small businesses, medium businesses, will be unfair. and many statutes, by the way, exempt businesses of various sizes and kind of have a graduated approach. I do think that that approach will be obsolete over time, because I think the cost of tools to groom and inventory and sort and play with data will essentially make it accessible to everyone, small, medium, or large businesses. And that brings me to impact. I think impact of a smaller to mid-sized business using sophisticated tool will be massive. It will be essentially level setting. And I think we'll see a rise of small to medium businesses. We, for the last couple of decades, with internet and other technologies, we sort of have seen decrease of those and consolidation. And because resources allow larger businesses to have access to things that are not accessible to, I think with data and tools and proliferation of AI tools, there is a potential, depending on how, again, consolidation of those tools happen and pricing of those tools happen and investment dollars go. There is a world where the small, medium businesses will be actually experiencing renaissance, because now you have access to tools, and provided that you have an entrepreneurial mind, you can take advantage of those tools and really flourish.
Well, and I also think there are the potential for government grants out there. I think that there's going to be, we're seeing that with the EO Act. If no one's gone, if you're an entrepreneur and you've not gone to AI.gov and looked at some of the resources that are available and keeping an eye on it, I recommend doing that. I think you and I are both practically minded people, Olga, and I like to compare the ideal to the reality of the rollout, because we're both ops minded people again. How do you see this? If everyone kind of buys into this idea of standardization of metadata for data sets, what are some of the challenges you see happening just from the concept of, we know that there are data sets out there that exist that are floating around that AI models have been built on? Do you see that kind of sunsetting out, like those models being seen as old and out of date and not passing a vibe check? Or do you see it maybe having a failure to launch and not really getting accepted?
Generally, standards are beautiful things, especially if they're open and not proprietary, because with proprietary standards, there's usually licensing on the friend basis, and there's usually an argument about what friend means in this context. But for an open standard like this, I don't believe there is a loss here. I mean, when you travel and you go to jurisdiction that doesn't take the 2-3 standards outlets, you find yourself banging the wall in the hotel, then rushing downstairs, asking for concierge services to give you the thing that works. And when they don't speak your language or don't have anything, you run to the convenience store next door that conveniently charges you $50 for the thing that costs 5 cents. And you will be happily paying it because you need to charge your damn phone. Tell me how I know it.
So, talking about PTSD, I mean.
Right, that's exactly right. So standards and everybody sort of conforming to it actually eventually makes it innovation possible and shortcuts possible and easier. And in fact, I do think that if we had standardization and contracts, for example, life would be a lot easier. And there are many movements to do that. And because we now have been without standards for so long, we do things kind of white glove and custom made in a way that makes our life miserable. And so we end up doing the equivalent of me being in a country without the right outlet, running to convenience store, paying $50 for something that should be cost like 10 cents. Okay, fine, a dollar if you want to make a profit. So I think that should help innovation if everyone adopts it and it is open and folks kind of happy to participate. Let's talk about AI, because even though the standard talks about other things, they made it an effort to be inclusive of all technologies, which I appreciate. But today AI is the the glamorous technology that we all worry about that really dominates the minds of folks in government and regulators and frankly markets. Companies that are actively investing in AI are seeing their stock rise. So the market is rewarding that behavior as well. Our regulators are very active as well. So how do the standards address specific challenges in data lineage and AI transparency?
I think that if it's dealing with sensitive data or data that could be ripe for bias or potential bias, I think it alleviates some of the, or it makes responding to regulatory compliance easier down the road. So if you put your compliance hat on and we don't really have AI compliance right now, but it's kind of like knocking on the door. It's going to come pretty soon. Nearly like we've talked about this before, Olga, like AI mapping of just your AI system so you can get your arms wrapped around what your reporting obligations may be. Part of that is probably going to be data set mapping. So you understand the provenance and the legal rights around it. And that's going to dictate how you can potentially use those data sets, or at least it lets you have information to more effectively make a risk assessment of, is this something that I can use for this use case in AI, or is there too much risk attached to it, so we need to find a different data set? I think it's just going to, it's really pushing that thought of risk assessment on the front end and not on the back end, which is really what we've all kind of experienced. There was no thought of risk being applied to AI. I'm reading a book right now, Coded Bias, I can't remember. Anyway, it's about facial recognition and talking about how getting that data, the images, to be able to train the systems, and kind of an acknowledgement from the author of her even saying, I didn't even think about things, but now we know that that's something we want to think about. Where did that data come from? So I just think it makes it easier to manage all of the coming compliance that's coming down the road.
I think what I call data supply chain is really going to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Just like the supply chain has become a thing since UN standards around factors that have been publicized and reduced to a visual that now many companies have adopted as their own and crafted their goals around it. I believe we are very much heading into this supply chain of data conversations.
I have a question for you about that, Olga. And it's going to go back to Web3 and blockchain. I know, right? Your favorite thing to talk about. But I not only am I obsessed with AI, but I'm obsessed with all emerging tech. And I know something that is talked about in Web3 circles that is people owning their data. Like it's not owned by the centralized parties. You can own it through your wallet, through blockchain. And I've heard people talk about the potential of individuals being able to monetize the use of their data. Like, do you see that as a potential in the future, Olga, or do you think that's just kind of a pipe dream?
I think monetization of self and extension of self is certainly makes sense given how we conceive of individual and individual liberties. I think for me today, maybe, and I think it's an interesting conversation, and I would like to see kind of how humans start trading all of themselves, I suppose. I think where I spend a lot of time today and startups I help is this sort of idea of ethical sourcing of data to train models. To me, that's a very interesting place to be. What it means, and ethically, it doesn't always mean ownership. There are other sort of considerations. So it's a broader term. And that's kind of what I mean by the supply chain of data. And I think the first step toward having a meaningful conversation is to have what this organization is doing is essentially classification and kind of transparency around it. But yes, the one thing that I think is very important is sort of this traceability and ethical use of it, broadly speaking. That's number one. And then before we get to monetization, it is sort of, again, to me, more about autonomy of self and extension of self. And there are a lot of clones of Olga on every social media. And if you want to figure out who owns versions of Olga on various social media, all you have to do is to read terms and conditions. And it will, in no uncertain terms, tell you that Olga doesn't own herself mm-hmm. on various social media. And we sort of take it as a normal. I do think that that owning self is important and making choices for yourself and your family. And then sure, one of those choices could be monetization of your talents and self. But I think control, it starts with traceability, transparency, and control. Control being the ultimate work here. And then control gives you choices, one of which is monetization, if that's what you choose. But I think for most humans, control over self and extension of self is what's important. That's why a lot of people are, I mean, privacy is one example among many. What do you think?
I think it's an interesting concept of being able to monetize your own data source, your own data. I think it would take a lot to move away from the current model where data is being collected by centralized groups and then maybe being packaged and sold in the context largely of marketing. I do think that people want more control, and you may be right. It may be less on how can I monetize, but how can I limit my data from being used? So that's kind of...
All I'm saying is that control is a table stakes. Yeah. Once you have control, you can decide what to do, what not to do. Today, I can tell you, I am not in control of versions of Olga that are floating out there for folks to use and misuse. Clearly, I'm at peace enough with it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be active. But that's a choice you make when you participate in the, especially if you actively participate in what technology offers today. All right, let's talk about 5 years from now, because 5 years mm-hmm. is actually a long time away, given how fast we move. In the years, we're talking a pretty big difference, I believe. What are your predictions for data governance trends in 5 years, especially if this develops, if we actually have the standards?
I do think that there will be an expectation that you have to have some sort of knowledge or understanding of the data provenance of your data sets. I think the regulations that we're seeing hinted at through the provisional agreement in the EU AI for the EU AI Act, I think what we're seeing, the rumblings in the US, I think that companies need to and parties need to start preparing for it. Just again, from the potential of compliance, being able to comply with those rules. So I think within 5 years, which as you said, is a long time in the world of AI, the expected model should be using data sets that have that provenance attached to it. I think that any AI model that isn't able to validate or show their credentials, their provenance credentials, is probably going to be considered a subpar product or not going to be considered trustworthy, to your point of trust. So that just may come out in entities or companies that use data sets that have that provenance. They may be able to pass certain security requirements and then are a security assessment by companies. It may mean you have a premium you can put on that AI system. So in addition to, you may have to, depending on how that AI system or tool is being used, you may be required to use a data source that where you can establish the provenance to confirm that data is being used as it should be.
And we see this trend in the consumer space. And actually, that's where Web3 is increasingly becoming sort of back-end technology that people use, and they don't even know that they're using it, which is actually how technology should be, or anything can be used. If you know exactly how it works and how to fix it, and actually have to look under the hood, then it's probably not working. I agree with you that this idea of knowing where something have been, how it got to you, is important. We see it, for example, with a sustainable fashion movement, where consumers are increasingly presented with information about where something was made, whether the factory abides by slavery principles and practices, whether the ship that shipped it is not unreasonably contributing to pollution and all of that stuff, and how it got to the store. And you sort of have that information attached to various items, specific items that you're buying. And generation of my children is very much actually interested in that information, because the concern about environment, for example, are massive. This is the generation that is concerned around it. So I don't believe it's going to be a massive leap to then basically do the same provenance to increase trust when it comes to data that may affect yourself and your essentially autonomy as an individual. I think it's definitely very much on trend. So as I alluded before, I basically expect the same UN chart related to data fairly quickly and what that means. I do think that in 5 years, we will have those pillars. And I do believe it's going to be kind of similar to what sustainability is definition today, both visual and in its aspirations.
Well, and I know I mentioned the concept of AI data mapping. You're mapping your data sources, thinking ahead to how we need to prepare for these potential regulations or requirements. And I can see maybe something else a company could do is just as they're drafting out their AI policies, their generative AI policies, acknowledging having some language in there or some provision in there about data sets. What are some other ways organizations or companies can start preparing for the potential of an expectation that data sets have to prove up their provenance?
That's a really, really good question. I tend to think of three things when it comes to data: sourcing, storage, and usage at every segment that it hits you, which is increasingly a lot of segments. So I would expect that if you've ever been involved in your organization data mapping, and I have, this is not, see, your dog is with me. She knows it is a process, it's an adventure. It takes a long time, it's a massive investment. So when you go through sort of data sourcing, storage, and usage, this is not gonna be an easy, short task. It's going to basically what I call it, painting Golden Gate Bridge. It's going to take a year and then you're going to do it all over again. And you never stop. It's sort of a continuous iterative method. So.
And I would just jump in if you don't mind. It's not just the data mapping, the tracking of everything. It's the data disposition as well. I think that we're kind of known as being data hoarders. And I don't think it's because we think all the data we have out there is so important. We just don't want to take the time to go and clean it up. I think acknowledging there may be data sources we need to sunset out.
I think it's part of, it's interesting. I think our data destruction practices are very much reflective of our closets. An average consumer, not just an American consumer, doesn't know I don't know what's in the back of my closet, and I'm fairly organized and on top of it. And then my children, who now roam through my closet freely, discover stuff that I didn't know I had. And it makes my day every time. I was like, oh, wow, you bought something nice. And they're like, no, we found it in your closet. So I think our practices with data are pretty much sort of a blown up version of what's happening in our closets. Mm-hmm. It's because the reality is for me to go through my closet, it's sort of, it's more than just finding time and deciding what to do, which is already decision fatigue mind mm-hmm. that Olga may not want to do. But it's also sort of walking down the memory lane. So, you know, it's like sort of acknowledging your mistakes or various things that happened in the outfit. It's kind of reliving memories and decisions. And I think it comes with a baggage, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, aside from time, I think there is more to this than just time. I think deciding to destroy or get rid of something in your life is an emotional decision.
I would agree with that. And I think with data, people get very worried about it. Like, are you sure we should delete it? Are we sure we should destroy this? So, and sometimes there are a lot of hoops you have to go through. You have to sign off paperwork and all that kind of stuff. So, but I think that is potentially part of it, but we also, I think, are inclined to look at the newest data, the newest thing more frequently. So as new data sets get, you know, brought in for a company to use, those are probably going to be the go-to data sets over time. So maybe it's by our own nature and we want the newest thing. It solves the problem for us.
We're coming to the end. And I think it would be useful to finish about sort of what practically a professional can do today to leverage standards for their career growth. What would you consider doing?
I mean, I think if you're new to being around standards, just learning what they are. The data trust group that built out this provenance standard, they have really good information on their websites and some really great use cases that you can go and understand how they're approaching this to roll out. NIST, of course, is a great resource for standards. In my practice, we deal with data all the time. So understanding like the concept of structured data versus unstructured and we expect certain metadata fields to be associated. Just getting familiar with that whole lexicon around data. If you're not familiar with it, but you want to get more involved in AI, I think it's a great way to get started. Start poking around and understanding the importance of the metadata, but also realizing it's also not always perfect either. There are reasons why sometimes the metadata may not be accurate. So it's you always have to be thinking, looking at things and going, if this doesn't look right, let me dig into it because there may be reasons why I can't rely on that metadata. And that's something I think that we have to think of even for these AI data sets down the road. That metadata may not be accurate for whatever reason. So I think just getting familiar with the fact that there are standards out there, and it's going to be important for things like AI regulations where data is the core of all of it.
I agree with that. That's actually a great way. Those are great suggestions. I'm not sure I have a whole lot more to add. I do agree with all of it. Definitely sort of the education part of it and staying on top of it part is important, and sort of volunteering and raising your hand. What I do find is that underutilized resource with technology is vendors. I think your vendor can really educate you a lot. Vendors are driven because they're driven by sale, yes, but that also means they're going to be educating you efficiently. So you say yes sooner. That education tends to be more entertaining, more progressive. Yes, it is skewed toward the product. And yes, it is also efficient and entertaining and on trend and very much modern and a good summary of where things are. And if you talk to more than one vendor, you're likely going to balance out sort of the various biases in the product. So I do think that vendors are an important resource to utilize in your education and data conversation fluency is going to become increasingly more important. So definitely stay on top of it. Great to have this conversation with you. I'm sure we're going to have many more.
Yes, yes. I'm looking forward to it as always. So.
Let's pledge to more geekiness. I'm
absolutely. Totally. I'm going to have a data shirt before long. So.
Okay. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
And that brings us to the end of another thrilling episode on the Notes to My Legal Self AI Insights. We had a fantastic time exploring the fascinating intersection of law and AI with you. But hold on tight, because the adventure doesn't stop here. Stay connected with us on social media to continue the conversation, share your thoughts, and be part of our incredible community of legal enthusiasts. Together, we can inspire, learn, and make a real impact on the world of law and AI. If you enjoyed today's episode, we encourage you to share it with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who could benefit from the exciting insights we discussed. Let's spread the knowledge and enthusiasm far and wide.